Well, good morning. I had the privilege of spending most of the week down at Deer Valley Meadows with our youth camp, which was great. Your worship here was awesome this morning at camp. It got a little more interactive and violent. We only had one concussion from one of our lovely people. That's what happens when you dance near tall speakers that tip over. Anyway, they survived. They're here this morning. We're glad you're here with us as well. We have been following the story of Jesus as recorded by Luke, found in the gospel written by him. And at this point in the story of Jesus, things have been going fantastically great. His followers have seen a lot of things that have never been done before. And many of the time it has left them, no doubt, speechless, unless you are Peter. Now, if you're not familiar with the Bible, Peter is one of Jesus' disciples, and Peter cannot stand any quiet space. You know people like that? Well, Peter was that guy. If Jesus was asking a question about something, Peter had an answer, whether he knew the answer or not. Last week, Luann brought us Peter's declaration that Jesus is the Son of God. Peter had got it right that time, although he didn't know what that would really mean and how it would affect his life later on. Peter's expectation and understanding of what would happen in the future were different than what was going to happen. This later would bring for Peter significant doubts. Peter would have a lot of processing to do about Jesus' life. And his life would be anything what Peter thought it should be. And the outcomes of Jesus' life would absolutely soon shock his followers. At this point in our story, as we've been going through Luke, where as a church we're going through the book of Luke and then on into Acts as part of our preaching calendar, Luke has recorded the uniqueness of Jesus. He has recorded numerous miracles that Jesus has performed, proving his uniqueness among the prophets. Jesus was like no other. And one of the reasons we sing about and we sing to and we pray to and we worship and we study and we seek to live our lives like is because Jesus is unique. Later in our journey, we'll catch up on a guy named Paul. He comes in to the book of Acts and he would write things, letters to people like to the Ephesians, Ephesians 5, 1 and 2. It says, "Be imitators of God, therefore, as dearly loved children, and live a life of love, just as Christ loved us." We are to be imitators of Jesus. Here is what Jesus had shown that had placed him far above anyone else. He had power over evil spirits. Jesus had cast out evil spirits out of people, leaving others watching amazed at his power. He had healed numerous people in front of crowds. People that were physically broken. They were blind from birth. They were paralyzed from birth. They had skin diseases that were visible. There was no doubters at all as they could see the results. He had raised a widow's son from the dead as well as a little girl who had died. On one of his boat trips across the Sea of Galilee, he being exhausted from doing so much ministry and caring and having so much compassion for people, and people just lined up after lineup after lineup, and he would minister to them. And he was exhausted. He gets in a boat with his disciples. They cross over the Sea of Galilee. One of the things that Sea of Galilee was known for was the little squalls that would come over the mountains and down onto the sea. Jesus is sound asleep, just literally exhausted in the bottom of the boat. And his seasoned disciples, fishermen, so they knew the water, rowing away. As they start going across the lake, a squall hits them. It is violent. It is crazy. They, as seasoned sailors, are terrified. And Jesus is zonked out in the bottom of the boat. He is exhausted. Somebody goes and wakes him up and says, "Don't you care that we're going to die?" You know, because if Jesus was going to die too, they wanted him to be awake for that. Anyway, Jesus gets up and he stands up and he says to nature, he says, "Be still." And instantly the sea, whew, like glass. And scripture tells us that his disciples, who had been terrified, were even more terrified when they saw the power of Jesus that he had. Our passage today takes us a week further into the timeline of Jesus. And Peter, James, and John are about to experience, those were some of Jesus' closest disciples, or to experience something that we call the Transfiguration. So we're going to read that this morning. It's in Luke chapter 9, verses 28 to 36, and I'm going to read that for us this morning. About 8 days after Jesus said this, he took Peter, John, and James with him and went up into a mountain to pray. As he was praying, the appearance of his face changed, and his clothes became as bright as a flash of lightning. Two men, Moses and Elijah, appeared in glorious splendor, talking with Jesus. They spoke about his departure, which he was about to bring to fulfillment in Jerusalem. Peter and his companions were very sleepy, but when they became fully awake, they saw his glory and the two men standing with him. As the men were leaving Jesus, Peter said to him, "Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us put up three shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." And there's a little thing here that Luke notes about Peter. He didn't know what he was saying, but he was saying, while he was speaking, a cloud appeared and covered them, and they were afraid as they entered the cloud. A voice came from the cloud saying, "This is my son whom I have chosen. Listen to him." When the voice had spoken, they found that Jesus was alone. The disciples kept this to themselves and did not tell anyone at that time what they had seen. When we read this, we have to remember that we are reading a narrative. And this part of the story ties back in the history of the nation of Israel. Some of you like history. I like history. There's some things on Netflix and I think on YouTube where I've watched every single thing there is to watch about a certain genre of history. Some of you like tracking your family history. I'm not so much of that. But Leanne and I had the privilege of going back to Halifax last October, and we went to a place that I'd heard about, and we thought it would be kind of cool, is we went to the Museum of Immigration, I think it's called. And I stood in a little lineup, and it's a place that records every immigrant that got off a boat from Europe or from wherever, and it's recorded there of their landing. And so I looked up my grandfather's name, Peter Bergsma. And they went in and dug around and they found it. It was so cool to see that my grandfather got off a boat in 1914 and this date at such and such a time. That's part of my history. And that's about as far as I can go back in my history. However, if you were a first century Jew, you were very aware of your history. You had a deep understanding of the history of your nation. I don't think there's another country in the world that knows its history better than the nation of Israel. They have celebrations that are marked throughout their calendar year. Some of them you've heard of. I'm probably saying some of these wrong, but I don't think anybody here is Jewish speaking, maybe. But Purim, which celebrates the story of Queen Esther and her involvement in saving her people from a genocide. Passover, you've heard of that one. The exodus of the Jews from Egypt. And this is key to Jesus' ongoing story as he heads towards Jerusalem, where Passover was celebrated, and he enters his final week during Passover and ultimately becomes the final Passover sacrifice, the Lamb of God. Shavuot, Moses, where they celebrate Moses receiving the Torah. Rosh Hashanah, 10-day period of repentance, which ends with Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. All very religious, and we can find the beginnings to these celebrations in the Old Testament. So most people in Jesus' day would have an understanding of God, an understanding that there was hope for change, where they were no longer to be the dominated people that they had been for most of their history, But that the script was going to flip to a place where they would become the dominant people. There was a belief that hope would come from within their people, and a person who, through their doing, would come and overturn whoever was in power at this time, or at the time when it would happen. At this point in their story, it was the Roman government which they were subject to. And if there was someone who displayed supernatural power and authority, it was Jesus. I totally lost where I am here. But that's okay. I've been found by Jesus. So I'm okay. So anyhow, Jesus had that supernatural power. And there was, but there was a little bit of a conflict there in what it was, because Jesus didn't come with like military power, although he had power to do some crazy stuff, but he cared about the poor. The poor really didn't have a lot of power. He cared about the marginalized people in his world, about the hungry, about the sick, about those who had no social status or had social status that was very negative. We think of Zacchaeus, very prominent, rich guy, tax collector, screwed over his whole people to get money and get rich. He had social status, but it was negative. We think of others who had no social status. We think about the woman at the well, had five husbands, was living with somebody who wasn't with her husband, had to go to the well to get water by herself in part of the day when nobody else was there because there was so much negative stuff for her. Woman caught in adultery. All these kind of things. Jesus cared deeply for these people. Jesus did get angry at times with certain people, but it was the same people that John the Baptist had gotten angry with as well. And he called them hypocrites. And it was actually the religious people. So the Pharisees, you've maybe heard of those guys. And John the Baptist would call them whitewashed tombs. They looked fantastic on the outside, but the inside was rotten. They were just a rotten bunch. And Jesus would drill down into their hearts and expose them for what they were and who they were. Well, in this passage today, Jesus takes three of his friends, three of his close disciples, up to the mountain to pray. And these three would experience something that once again rocked their world. So Jesus goes up to the mountain and he's going to pray, and he takes them with him. During Jesus' time of prayer, he is transformed into a glorious figure with a brilliance like lightning. Now, Peter, James, and John must have fallen asleep. They weren't much into praying at this point. However, due to the events that were going on, they awaken and they look over at Jesus. They see two others. No doubt in shock, they determine that these two mystical figures, one of them was Moses and one of them was Elijah. Now, Moses had had a similar experience, and they would know this from their history. He had gone up on the mountain. He had somewhat he had encountered God, and he had come back down, and it said his face was radiant. Same thing used to happen when he would go in to meet with God in the temple or the tent of meeting or wherever it was, and he would come out and there would be a veil over his face because his face glowed when he had been with God. So they could kind of go, oh, okay, that one's Moses. Now, Elijah was another one that they pegged him as. Elijah was the guy, and he gets pegged as the prophet Elijah, the other guy. John the Baptist had come wearing, and he was kind of referred to as Elijah a little bit as well, but he wore camel's clothing. He had a unique choice of clothing, camel hair and a leather belt. So we have three. We have Jesus, we have Moses, and we have Elijah. And those are all tied back into their history, those two. The topic of discussion that Moses and Elijah were having with Jesus was about what was coming up in Jesus' soon departure from this earth. A topic close to Jesus' heart, and he often spoke about it, sometimes hinting about what was going to happen in the future, and sometimes it was very blatant, especially as he got closer and closer. But his disciples never heard what he was saying. He'd drop hints, they wouldn't get it. Now, Leanne, who's the one that was standing right here, one of the many beautiful voices on stage, we've been married for 34 years as of yesterday, I think. Okay? Woo-hoo! Yeah. And we're a little more relational. We're not accountants. So I remember a number of years back, Leanne was talking to George, Pastor George, when he was here. And she was saying, okay, we're at 29. We're going to do something really big for our 30th. Like, we're going to go to LaDuke or something. I don't know. We're going to just do something special. And so George goes, oh, okay. And when's that? Oh, next year. Okay. He's like, what year were you married? So he tells her and he goes, Leanne, this is your 30th. We don't do math. We have two kids, I think. Yeah, anyway. Anyhow, there are times when Leanne and I can finish each other's sentences. And there are times when I think, when I know that what Leanne is thinking. That happened once. And there are times when Leanne knows what I'm thinking. That happens all the time. And there are other times when we communicate and we're like speaking two different languages. It's English, but we just don't get each other. We just miss it. You ever get that? You say something, they're like, you're just talking. Well, this happened with the disciples all the time. Jesus would talk about what was coming, and they would not get it. They never picked up what he was laying down. They were deaf to the future that Jesus was talking about. And the future was coming that would greatly impact them. And it's a topic that they wouldn't completely figure out until after the resurrection of Jesus. So, here we have Peter not knowing what to say. But he had to say something because he was Peter. So he suggests that they build three tents, similar to what God inhabited in Moses' time. So one for Moses, one for Elijah, and one for Jesus. Wow. There was hope. Maybe this was the time that great things were about to happen for the nation of Israel. We have Moses, who had taken the people out of the promised land with great power over Pharaoh. And so, man, he's here. Then we have Elijah, who had done some crazy stuff too. And he was more looking to the future. It says here in Malachi, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord, and he shall turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the hearts of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. So Elijah was supposed to be coming in the future. So here we have Moses from the past. We have Elijah from the past. And now we have Jesus here. And this looks like the dynamic trio that's going to do what they thought he should do. So it's easy to understand. And Peter blurts out that he's going to build, that we should build three tents so that, I don't know, they each get their own little tent. He didn't know what to say. But while Peter was speaking, a cloud envelops them, and a voice from within the cloud announces, "This is my son, whom I have chosen. Listen to him." The voice is attributed as God's. The only other time God spoke of Jesus is at his baptism, where he states, "This is my son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased." But here he's added, "Listen to him." After the voice of God speaks, Jesus is the only one standing there. The old guard had passed and was passing. Moses' time had passed. Elijah's time had passed. Only Jesus is there. The reality is that we know that the old was closing. Jesus was opening a new and final chapter of which our eyes were only for Jesus. The passage ends with Peter, James, and John telling us that they didn't tell anyone and they kept it to themselves. I'm sure they must have shaken their head and thought, did that really happen? They come down from the mountain and ministry starts happening again. See, we read the first half of our Bible and it speaks of a looking forward to one who was coming to bring hope and healing to our world. And we believe that is Jesus, God incarnate. The second part of the Bible, called the New Testament, speaks of his coming, his sacrificial life and death, His miraculous resurrection. His commissioning of His followers to go and make disciples, to bring His kingdom wherever they go. Where there's no kingdom, where Jesus isn't known, where people aren't able to have a relationship with Jesus because they know nothing about Him. We are told to go and take the wonderful message of Jesus to our world. And this is the story. After the Gospels, there are many letters of encouragement written to groups. We Ephesians, Galatians, Philippians, all these different letters that are written to gatherings that are in different places that meet regularly to worship Jesus. We call them churches here in our culture. And it's a place where we lift our eyes to Jesus and which we are one. So, how do we listen to Him? For Peter, James, and John, this was a watershed moment. They alone saw this and they experienced it. Now, throughout the story of Israel, there were markers that would be put up. God would do something, whether that was Joshua or Moses or whatever. They go across a river and they say, okay, go gather a pile of rocks and we're going to make a pile of rocks here. And it's going to be a little monument so that whenever you pass by here, you're going to look at those rocks and go, what are those rocks for? Kind of like those silver balls over by Fort Edmonton. You go by them all the time and you go, what are those for? Nobody knows. Unless you're the artist who got paid millions of dollars to put them there. I don't know. But anyhow, for the nation of Israel, there were markers that were put out there. They'd walk by and they go, ah, yes, we remember. That's when God did this. And they would remember what God had done. In the mundane of life, when things are just kind of blasé, they could go back and remember, oh, wait, God was with us. God did this. Well, I was at camp this last week. It was wonderful. And one of the markers in my life and spiritual journey where I can look back and remember when God opened my eyes to see Him more clearly and it changed the direction of my life was at a camp. And I want you to think for a bit of markers in your life that when you look back, often when we are discouraged, disheartened, and feel like we're going, is this really real? Like our faith thing, our God thing? You can look back as Peter, James, and John could to this moment in their journey and say, wait, remember that time on the mountain? I want to share some of my moments where I saw or experienced Jesus in a significant way. For many with a church background, it has been a camp experience. Sitting around a campfire, sitting around a cabin, sitting in a chapel, and you have this experience with God that leaves you speechless. I grew up in a home where I heard the story of Jesus, and maybe some of you have, or maybe by God's grace, you connected with God through another venue a little later on in your life. As I chatted with campers this week down at youth camp at Deer Valley, I listened to their stories. For a number of them, camp is the only place they have any spiritual connection to God in their life. I'm always curious, how did you get to camp? Well, a friend invited me. Ah, who's your friend? It's nice you have a friend, by the way. They don't come anymore. So their friend that brought them and got them started going to camp is no longer going to camp. Sounds like they're kind of disconnected from camp. Yet God has this youth at camp, and they continue to come, where they have a chance to hear of Jesus and to see Jesus and experience His love through the people around them. See, God creates places and spaces in our world where He draws people to Himself. I remember one girl, I used to a pastor over at Ellerslie Baptist down the road there, good church. I was there for 27 years. When Southbrook was being built, if you're from over there, you know where that is. But there's a little strip of grass about 50 feet wide between Southbrook and our little parking lot there. And we would go out there because it had grass. We would go out there and we would play soccer. One day, we were out there playing soccer, and there was a little grade 7 girl. She was on the other side of the fence, and she was watching us have a great time. We were a bunch. She was solo by herself. Someone invited her to hop the fence and play. She did. And she made a real connection with her face that day to the soccer ball. And spent 30 minutes in the kitchen of the church with her face in a bag of frozen peas. And so began a journey with Jesus that continued all the way through high school and into her adult life. She met Jesus through a group of similar age people who invited her to join them in relationship and fun, and her life was significantly changed. I have had a few times in my life where I have experienced God in that way. For myself, camp has been significant. I grew up without any connection to in a church that had no connection to camp whatsoever. We didn't have one. It was foreign to me. When I was 19, I started going to a different church. I felt like I needed to go somewhere where I could kind of start fresh. My dad had been kind of somewhat of a big name in the church that I was with, and I was always like, oh, your dad's awesome. Your dad has got this amazing blah, 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 blah. And because I was his son, and we had a little bit of conflict at times, and I'm like, I just needed to go someplace where I could just be me and figure out this God thing without this pressure of trying to be like my dad. So when I was 19, I began going to another church, and my spiritual journey began to move. I started to understand God's love for me. And truth be told, the girls were way better looking at that church that I started going to. Because my former church didn't have any girls except for my sisters. So, you know, it was good. But that's not why I went. Don't judge me. But it certainly helped. Okay? But God began to stir in my life. And I began to serve. I began to serve with the junior highs. Who are great. Junior highs are awesome people. They're the pinnacle of God's creation. Okay? But I was invited to go to camp as a counselor. Didn't really know what that entailed, but I knew I would be in a cabin with about 6 teenage guys. And there was one camper that greatly impacted my life. Camp Kuanos is the camp that we went to. You might have heard of that one. It's a pretty big camp on Vancouver Island. And we left on the ferry. You go over there. You get off the ferry. You get on a bus. You drive up to the camp. And then you would get out of the bus. And it would be like a football field away where you had to walk across the field to go and register. So here we are trucking along with a bunch of kids that had got off the bus and leaders as well. And I got my little suitcase or whatever I had in my sleeping bag and my pillow. And we're heading across the field. And as I look, this is just absolutely gorgeous creation. The camp was up on a hill. And some mornings we would look out and there'd be orcas. Like, and then a little while later we'd throw the kids in there and go swimming. It was great. Anyway, help them, you know, have faith in God and get saved and all that kind of stuff. His life was, you know, right there. Anyway, I'm walking across. There's this big oak tree over by the place where we would had to go to register. And as I'm going, I see up about 10, 12 feet, there's a kid sitting. He's sitting there. Kind of a goofy looking kid from what I could see far away. He's sitting up and he's sitting on this branch and he's kind of watching everybody. So I was with my friend and I'm like, oh, what's with the guy in the tree? And I'm like, oh, that's Everett. He comes every year to camp and he climbs up the tree whenever he's got free time or can get out of playing the game. And he sits up in the tree and he was safe up there and he just kind of watched everything happen. And I thought, okay. So, and I think they called him the Birdman because he was up in the tree all the time. Sat up there all week, every year. Well, there was about 75 guys that were part of this that were coming, about 150 kids in total. And I love those kind of kids. And I said in my heart, I'm like, God, put Everett in my cabin. That would be really cool. Never thought it would happen. But, you know, better chances in the lottery because 75 kids, I'm getting 6 of them. I got a chance, okay? Well, guess what? I go down to my cabin and I get to meet my boys, and there was Everett in my cabin. I'm like, yes, this is good. You know, wow. And over the week, I got to love this kid. And he wasn't hard to love. He was just really awkward and geeky and unathletic as could be. And he had some things going against him in life. But I loved him. But it wasn't just me. It was the rest of the kids at camp loved on Everett. And over the week, it was amazing. We saw Everett come out of the tree and he would come down. And then throughout the week, he'd come and he would play volleyball. Now, you all know that kid where, you know, the ball's supposed to go that way. Whenever Everett hit the ball, it went that way. And it's just like, oh, and everybody's just like, yes, Everett hit the ball, you know, which was like the pinnacle of his athletic career, even though it went in the wrong direction. But everybody loved on him, and he was transformed throughout that week. God did some amazing things as he felt the presence of God through others that were loving on him and caring for him. Well, the last night of camp is always the one where everybody's exhausted, so it's a little more emotional. And one of the things that they did at this camp, as they do it, others I'm sure, is we would sit around and kids get a chance to stand up and share a little bit about their week. And so we were in this big indoor area. I don't know if it was raining or whatever. And we're all sitting there and, you know, the spirit is quiet. Oh, we'd like to hear. Somebody shares a little bit and that's great. Little sniffles here and there. And then Everett decides that he's going to get up and share, which is kind of funny because this totally fits where Everett was. He was sitting right beside the piano and he went to get up. He put his arm up and he put it like down hard on about 40 of the piano keys. And it was just like, bang, you know, and it's like, oh, it kind of broke. It didn't actually break the mood because it was Everett. And he got up and he just shared how God had touched him in a significant way that week by what he had experienced at camp. You see, for me, one of the things when I look back on my journey with God and I'm trying to remember that God is real, I look back to that time at Camp Kwanos. There's others that I have along the way of my journey with God. But when I wonder if God is real, I'm like, I've got markers in my journey. So my question to us today is this. Are there moments that God has given you? You may have forgotten. Life may have hit you like a ton of violent bricks. And I know that has done that to many people. Or you may have drifted off into ambivalence. And you may be thinking this morning, why am I even here? Yet if you dig, you may find moments when God became so real to you, you had to admit that he was real. Maybe today, if you've never experienced that, this could be one of your days. When you encounter Jesus in a fresh way, or maybe even for the first time. And today becomes a marker in your journey with a living God who loves you. A God who loves you more than you could ever imagine. And we look out at our world and we look at those around us who God has put us in proximity to. And we say, how can I, who have experienced God's goodness and God's love and God's blessing, how can I push that out to those around me? I know many of you do that. I in the back of my ear, I have these. I know there's some of you teachers who, man, you work in tough, hard places, and yet you do it with the eyes of Jesus and his hands, all motivated by his heart for kids who need to have hope, who need to have peace in their world, in their turbulent worlds. So, my challenge to us, look back on the markers. If you don't have one, may today be one of the markers in your life. You just say, God, whatever it is, I'm yours. Just take me. Do something inside me. I want to follow you. And God will do something in your heart. You see, God loves you where you are at. But he doesn't want to leave you where you are at. Because
He wants to journey with you through life. This morning, as kind of a response to this little message here, we're going to sing a song, Build Your Kingdom. We want God to build His kingdom in me. We want God to build His kingdom in us so that this place becomes a place that is known as a place where people can come and find a relationship, find the love of the living God who has proven to us that He loves us through His Son, Jesus.